there ever a moment in this scene where you might be in danger? Because if, you know, if you walk into a room with a crazy person, I don't know, I don't know that I ever have. Like, I mean, well, I guess I've been around some homeless cats on the street. Yeah. I've been grappled by one or two of those. And it's like, while nothing might happen, lots of things might happen.
Right.
So what is that relationship? How much do you know?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Hedro Theater Podcast. We're going to be sitting in the quiet theater today, so there will be no cars going through this interview, which is a very good thing, because today I have sitting with me the director of Hamlet,
Dan Hodge.
And Dan Hodge, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing really well, man. How are you?
Yeah, well, we're on a strict time limit here, because I think we're about to jump into rehearsal, so let's go ahead and jump in this. So let's start off with it. We've made a substantial cut to our Shakespeare, so not quite what the Reduced Shakespeare Company did to it, but we're not far from it. So so let's talk about that. How do you cut something that is considered by some the greatest play of all time?
You know, it's tricky. I feel like we have a tendency to place Shakespeare on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And I think that happened in the 1800s when he became very venerated. Mm-hmm. And really, at the end of the day, he was a playwright and he was an entertainer. So I look at, whenever I approach cutting a classical play, I think, how do I deliver this story to these people? And each audience is different, and each company of actors is different. So in approaching this particular cut of Hamlet, not too differently from the way I dealt with the Scottish play last year, thinking about what hedgerow audiences are expecting, and both of these plays are falling into kind of the fall thriller slot, as I was told. So how do I take this classical play, which certainly has thrilling elements, and create something that
there is a ghost.
Yeah, there is a ghost. Well, and there's lots of secrets and closed-door politics. And I thought, how do I take this play, which could be intimidating, mm-hmm. and make it something that is fast-paced and exciting and unexpected, and highlight the elements of it that are unexpected.
Yeah. Well, throughout our rehearsal, I mean, that's definitely something I've seen you do. It's with the changes we've made, with the cuts we made, it's very acceptable. It's very fast-paced. I know Penn was actually talking to me about it, and she was like, well, you guys, that's like a 5-page scene up there on the battlements. I'm like, no. Like, we get moving. It's like, I say two lines, and the ghost shows up. He's in there.
Yeah.
So you're shooting to keep the play moving? And
keep it moving forward, and to keep things. It's a play that everybody thinks that they know, and there are aspects that they do, and there are aspects that they don't. And the thing that's interesting to me is finding the kernel of the story. And Hamlet's tricky that way, because there's a lot of it that is meditation upon themes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? For Shakespeare, it's really unusual. Not that he meditates upon themes, but that the plot sometimes takes a back seat to those. So what we've tried to do for the purposes of this production is really do a very incisive look at what the plot is and keep it moving forward. And also, trying to eliminate some of the things that are tricky to understand, which is something I do, whether I do it here or at the pack or anywhere, is when I look at cutting a play, I try and figure out what are the things that are just going to be stumbling blocks in the audience's way.
Okay.
I'm not going to keep something just because it's Shakespeare if I think it's going to throw people off the scent of what the story is really about, what the evening is that we're trying to create.
Okay. So is that something that you kind of wish, well, maybe in your work or through the stories, is that something that you sort of wish an audience would understand? Is there something that you would like an audience to kind of get about Shakespeare in and of itself?
I mean, the thing that I always hope for audiences to get about Shakespeare or any of his contemporary writers is that they're not that difficult to understand. I mean, there's this misconception that we have, particularly as Americans, that Shakespeare is too difficult, mm-hmm. that we don't get him, that he speaks a different language. And fundamentally, that's not really true, because we get the thee-thou substitution, and there's a couple of weird syntax things that he does. But for the most part, the language has changed really in nominal ways. And, you know, there are purists who would really pillory me for adapting a word here or a word there and flipping things. It's some I keep and some I don't. It's all a matter of personal taste. But really trying to just say, guys, it's not that difficult. If you really just show up and pay even a little bit of attention, you're going to get swept up in the story. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I did a show a couple of years ago and people asked me whether I had translated it. And I said, no, it's Shakespeare. And people were surprised.
Yeah. Which I guess I would say that probably is a huge compliment. Like the fact that if they thought you translated it and you were actually doing the text and the work. But,
sure.
But that, so I would say that they got it.
Then. Yeah. I did a production of Richard III a couple of years ago for Commonwealth Classics. Mm-hmm. And we had toured parks outside. And the highest compliment that I was paid was a dear friend of mine brought her 12-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
And at the end of the performance, the 12-year-old daughter came up and told me how much she loved Shakespeare and how excited she was to see more.
That's a win.
And that was a huge win.
Yeah.
It's exactly what the production was about.
So then what do you use to unpack the language and the text, to get into it, to find the things that you, the nugget of truth there, the kernel of truth,
yeah,
as you said. So what are the things that you use to unpack it?
You know, there are a lot of signposts that he gives you that are easy to find if you know what you're looking for. He really is great at threading the argument through the verbs and through information, interpersonal information. And if you can find the places to hang your hat, there's a lot of his speeches have if-then structure.
Yeah.
Someone will say, if so-and-so, then, yeah, and then one of my favorite sets of words in Shakespeare, but, mm-hmm, and yet, which always indicate a change of direction. And I think if you really look into these plays for relationships, looking for what people mean to each other,
yeah,
that really cracks it open, and Shakespeare drops all kinds of clues. We discovered in rehearsal the other day that Gertrude, Hamlet's mother, is incredibly terse when she deals with Polonius,
yeah,
which kind of gives rise to the notion that she doesn't like him particularly much. He's, mm-hmm, a bit of a meddler.
Yeah.
And looking for those little helpful hints can really go a long way towards giving the audience something that they can hold on to.
Gotcha.
Because if you have just general wash of Shakespeare, then the audience pats themselves on the back for coming, and, mm-hmm, they forget about it 2 days later.
Yeah. They're like, oh, it sounded so pretty. No idea what happened.
Exactly.
It was lovely. It was a lovely evening. We had some wine. And
yeah, and so many of those, I've seen many, many of those productions. Yeah. And the ones that really stick with me are the ones that are electric. And you remember not just what it looked like on stage, but the way people spoke.
Yeah. There's those moments, I mean, those grounded moments that just jump, and you're like, oh, that was it.
Absolutely.
That actor was there. So so with that, then, what do you think that is a common, specifically with Hamlet, what is a common misconception that, or the whitewashing that,
yeah,
you've seen done a lot?
I think the greatest single disservice that has been done to this play in the 20th and 21st century. Well, anyway, Laurence Olivier made a really appalling movie in 1939.
Which was considered the greatest
film.
Oh,
yeah, and it won Oscars.
Yeah.
And in the beginning of that, before the first line of actual Shakespearean text is spoken, Olivier's got this little preamble. He says, Hamlet is the story of a man who could not make up his mind. Mm. And that's rubbish.
Yeah.
People like to think of Hamlet as this guy who wears black and lazes around on stage, just can't get anything done, and to be or,
yeah,
not to be. And that's not really it. He's actually a guy who is trying awfully hard to do too many things.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs certainty. If you're going to murder a king and overthrow an entire kingdom, you kind of want to know whether you're acting on the right impulses.
Yeah, whether you listen to a good ghost or a bad
ghost. Or a bad ghost. Yeah. So I think there's a great misconception with this play that nothing happens in it, or that the protagonist is lazy or indecisive, and that is absolutely untrue.
Okay. So, well, then along that same line, if you're putting Olivier at the bottom there of doing a disservice,
well,
which I feel like the bones under this theater might shake a
little
bit.
Oh, well,
when you
and
say,
you know, I've got no personal beef with Olivier.
Yeah.
There are just a couple of things that he does that I thought were suspect.
And then, okay, well, then on the flip side of that, then what is your personal favorite, either film or live production, that you've seen of Hamlet?
I had the very good fortune when I was in college in 2001, I was in London, and I saw, at the Globe in London, mm-hmm, I saw Mark Rylance play Hamlet, and I didn't know his reputation at the time. I heard it was a good production, so
yeah,
I went to see it. And I was a groundling, I paid £5, and I stood right up against the stage in the front. And he was a revelation. And the thing that I remember most about that production was that Hamlet, Polonius, Claudius, Gertrude, Laertes, Horatio, everyone was hilarious. It was an impossibly funny, funny show until it wasn't anymore.
Yeah.
And you watched all these people who were vibrant, interesting, funny, clever people making bad decision after bad decision,
mm-hmm,
and ultimately having to pay the piper. And when you've laughed with someone as hard as I laughed with Mark Rylance playing,
yeah,
Hamlet, the immense cost of what ultimately happens to him was amazing.
Yeah.
And I remember him standing at the grave holding the skull of Yorick the Jester,
yeah.
which was essentially the death of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that he wasn't going to walk away from this one. And it was a beautiful moment and a wonderful production.
Well, Jared and I talked about that a little bit. I mean, he helped me with the current production, Communicating Doors, saying, you know, like, his job is not to make Hamlet sad. Hamlet is already sad.
Oh yeah, Hamlet's a sad.
It's finding the other side. It's finding when he's funny, when he's ridiculous, and when he's being clever. So I mean, it can obviously be said, but like, would you say that that's part of Shakespeare? Is like, yes, there's the obvious thing, but then you have to find the opposites to play.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that is always useful with Shakespeare is remembering that at the core they are people.
Mm-hmm.
Hamlet is not a prince.
Yeah,
Hamlet is a man who happens to be a prince. So he's open to a wide variety of anything that you could be wide open to.
Yeah.
I mean, we tend to want to pigeonhole these characters into specific cubbies that have been handed down through history.
Yeah.
And we're in very great danger of performing the tradition rather than performing the play.
Right.
And the play is really, really human and has great potential for humor and pathos and misery and joy. It's all contained in there.
Okay. So then with that, and we'll wrap it up right here,
sure.
is with that, with our production then, like what is it that audiences should know about it before they come to see it? How is it that we are trying to awaken that production, make it different, make all of the choices matter? What is it that you would say about this cut, this production, this cast, and with you at the helm of it, that audience should know about it?
My hope for this is to take this play that everyone is very familiar with and make it something that is surprising. And I think what people will, my hope is that people coming to the show will be surprised by the very keen human element and by the decisions being made. It's not a foregone conclusion that Hamlet is even going to go to the battlements to see this ghost of his father. So that each step on the journey is not predestined. It's moment-to-moment decision and life that leads us towards the end. So you're seeing something unfold in front of you
mm-hmm.
rather than seeing something that is pat and expected.
Okay. All right. So, well, that's all. And we've got rehearsal coming up real short, so I know got to let you go. But before I do, I know you also have a show going on right now, so would you like to plug your show?
Sure. I've been doing double duty here. Tonight, actually, I open in the 39 Steps at the Bristol Riverside Theater. And we run through, gosh, the weekend this opens. I think we close on October 28th or 29th.
Okay.
So yeah, you can come out there and watch me change a bunch of hats and do some ridiculous mess with a mustache.
Yeah, so if you loved our production, guys, I can't stress it enough. You need to go see this production at the Bristol and see Dan as one of the clowns, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Well, you got the mustache right now, so I didn't know if you were a Hannay.
No. Okay. I'm not a Hannay. I'm a clown.
All right. So everyone, if you're interested in any of this, go to the website, www.hedrotheater.org. Hamlet is coming up October 24th, I believe, is when we open. But before that, we are actually doing a cabaret. Go to the website to check that out. For all information on dates, times, and tickets, go to the website, hit it up. Dan, thank you very much for sitting down with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Hedro Theater podcast. We look forward to seeing you at Hedro Theater. And that's it.
Great. Thank you.